morning, Reverend Dorothea Gopier.
Morning, Chair. Morning, members. Marion Johnson from the Department of Social Development.
The gentleman at the back, if you can introduce yourself, and you can sit at the chair at the mic.
Good morning, members. My name is Riyad. I'm from PMG.
Members, apologies. I have member Gillian and member Makaleni is still stuck in traffic, so she's running late. Any apologies that you want to tender?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. McDonald is at the PTM this morning.
Then, with no further ado, Ms. Johnson, I'm giving over to you. Members, you have the presentation in front of you, but it will also show on the screen.
The members, we are going to be looking at the performance of the department for the period October 2017 until March 2018. That is sort of the last semester of the previous financial year. We'd like to continue using the BPME classification, which looks at our targets in terms of what we have achieved and not achieved. Previously, there was a partially achieved category, but that's been done away with. Members also, and Chair, must indicate that this is a pre-audit report, because the Auditor General of South Africa has not yet completed the audit of the department's predetermined objectives. I would also like to suggest, with the permission of the members and the chair, that we only look at those indicators that we did not achieve. There are about 20 of them. We have about 61 indicators in total. And so we're looking at, if you want to look at sort of statistics around achievement versus non-achievement, we have achieved two-thirds of our targets. We will also give our reasons, of course, for why we haven't achieved the others. I thought also, because we're also going to be looking at customized indicators as well, just to inform the committee that the National Department of Social Development has asked all DSPs to review and comment on the sector indicators. And I think that's also because only one of the six Departments of Social Development in fact set targets for all the sector indicators in the previous financial year. So it's not only us in the Western Cape. The program administration, the corporate management, will go very quickly because, members, there is only one standard that we, one indicator that we didn't achieve our target, and that was for a management of performance assessment tools, the impact which DPME has introduced, I think about three or so financial years ago. And the reason why we never attained our level 4 was because the DPME withdrew that management standard in August of last year. That's a little bit of the problem that we have, because we only get the impact standards sort of in around August of the previous year under review. So it becomes a little bit of a problem. But this is the first time actually that they remove the standard completely from the list of standards they sent us, and hence we can't say that we have achieved it. So that was the only indicator in program one. Madam Chair, with respect to the reasons for not setting targets for the other indicators for program one, it is there were three other sector indicators: number of social work bursary holders that graduated, number employed by the department, number of EPWP work opportunities, and number of learners on learnership programs. With respect to the first one, Madam Chair, it is difficult to set targets with respect to whether students are bursary holders are going to graduate or not, because it's something that we don't have control over. And also it depends on the individual circumstances of students, because some drop out for various reasons or and academic results as well would depend a lot on the student and his circumstances. Why we also don't include the number of social work bursary holders that graduated is because we do report on that within our annual report. It is reported in Part A of our, it's about supposed to be annual report of annual performance plan. Sorry, members, about that. The number of EPWP work opportunities created, this we report on under Program 5, Madam Chair, because that is where our budget is allocated. So it's not that we're not reporting on it. With respect to the learners on the learnership programs, a learnership, as indicated here, is defined by the DPSA as a specific learning in type of learning initiative, training initiative. So the EPWP sort of normal kinds of training programs that people go through are not learnerships per se. Hence, we don't want to confuse the issues in terms of indicating that we have learnerships in the province and that is in the department, sorry. And that's why we actually haven't included the notion of a learnership as an indicator. If we move on to our social welfare services, which consists of the sub-program services to older persons, services to persons with disability, and social relief, we find that we underperformed on the indicator with respect to older persons accessing residential facilities. And this is a reason we've got 9,000 beds that we fund. There are people die, unfortunately, within old age homes. And also we've got a number of people who are under the age of 60 years. Because they are frail, they have nowhere else to go. We can't not keep them and actually support them in these facilities. But we can't count them because they are under 60 and we only count 60 years and older. With respect to the indicator dealing with independent and assisted living, the department is currently engaging with the sector because there is a lack of independent and assisted living facilities. And that is what we actually trying to see. How do we engage? How do we find suitable places for older persons to then actually be taken up in assisted living and independent living facilities? With respect to our persons with disabilities, accessing funded residential facilities, here again also, the mortality rate amongst people who are severely disabled also is relatively high. And then there are the issues of affordability with respect to vacancies. Fundamentally, the DSD subsidy is too low and the facilities can't keep up with the operational costs. So what facilities would do, and I think we did mention this in the past, is that they'd rather leave the bed vacant because they actually can't afford to fill it. So that is quite a big problem for the department. With respect to the protective workshops as well, a lot of the times there's issues of ill health where people cannot get to the workshops, and also there is a transport challenge in terms of disabled persons being able also then to get themselves to the workshop. On the other side, which is a brighter side, we are having people who used to be employed in workshop, protective workshops, who actually obtain employment outside of the workshop. Also with our number of persons with disabilities in our funded community-based daycare programs, here it's a very similar reason, is that there's ill health that results in hospitalization and therefore our clients can't actually participate in these programs. Members, you also wanted to have a look at the budget for the year under review, and as I said, this is all pre-audit expenditure, but the programs are actually spending their budgets on services to the various categories. And what you'll also note is that the increases are not as big as one would like to see it from previous financial years. But we have actually had a relatively better allocation for our older persons program as well. Sorry, shall I leave it up? I'm not quite sure if it's okay. Again, members, the reasons why we haven't set targets for particular customized indicators or national indicators. And members, when we do a comment or send the review through to the national department, these are the reasons that we have given them previously, but we will also be providing them with this input. Number of residential facilities for older persons. In every annual report, there is a list of all the organizations that we fund. And that list is published every year, and it is contained in the annual report. So you're actually going to get more information there, because you actually get what they allocated, where they are, who they are, as opposed to merely a number. And hence we didn't think it was necessary to actually duplicate that as an indicator. Number of organizations trained on social and behavior change programs. Here again, we don't want our NPOs or even our clients to actually be part of programs that are not accredited, by the sector or body, because then we're not sure about the standards. And hence, and because no criteria has been provided around the standards for these programs, we don't utilize this indicator. With respect to beneficiaries receiving psychosocial support services, all beneficiaries of social work services receive psychosocial support as part of the therapeutic process. So we also didn't think it was necessary to include this as an indicator, because it can be double counting, and then it would also be the whole issue of having to disaggregate what a part of a routine social work practice. Program 3, our children and families program, consisting of the sub-programs care and services to families, child care and protection, ECD and partial care, child and youth care centers, and community-based services to children. We have seemed to be doing quite well with our family program indicators. Where we did not achieve our targets, the number of children reunified with the families or alternative caregivers. Reunification is actually a long process, and it is a process that is dependent on whether both the family and the child that needs to be reunified are ready to actually come together. So hence we can't sort of put a time period on that process, and that is sort of one of the major reasons why we actually haven't been able to achieve our target there. Okay, the number of children's court inquiries, that's investigations initiated by the children's courts. This is a relatively new indicator for us. I think we've only had it for about a year or two. So we're also still looking at the targets and trying to target more effectively. But however, the issue here is also whether the court actually instructs the initiation of the investigation, because only a court can do that. So it also depends on the court demand for the child protection services. The issue of the Form 58 reports submitted by the designated social workers to the children's courts. A lot of the times investigations take quite a while to conclude, and to a large extent it also is dependent on the documentation that's available. Birth certificates is a big problem, because the court also requires that all the children's birth certificates, all their, the documentation of the parents, etc., is in order. I've been told by my colleague that the courts are also asking or instructing, actually, the social workers to ensure that the birth certificates are processed or the birth certificates are obtained. This means that they have to actually go to Home Affairs and complete the documentation, which is, it's also a long and tedious process. So it would be a, would have actually been a better idea if the court instructs Home Affairs to ensure that the children actually have access to things like the birth certificates. But I think it was yesterday where the department did meet with the courts, with SAPS and Home Affairs, around developing an appropriate referral pathway for child protection, which will have to include administrative issues of this nature. Number of children's court inquiries completed. This is also depends to a large extent on getting reports completed on time and, of course, availability of court dates as well. When we come to the ECD sub-program now, we also didn't achieve our target with respect to children, number of children in funded ECD services. The ECDs, and where it has experienced quite a few challenges regarding the requirements for re-registration. And also, if they don't re-register in time, there's their non-compliance, they become deregistered, we can't fund them. And we have to stop funding while we help them actually get registered. What the department has also done in this respect is that we've centralized the registration process. One, that frees up our social workers to actually do more child protection social work, provide more child protection social work services, but it also then that at head office we can have an overview of what is going on and how we can actually more rapidly assist the ECDs with their re-registration. We've also had some challenges in terms of meeting our targets with regard to the registration of all partial care, but that includes the early childhood development and also our after-school care. But in addition to actually also centralizing registration, we received a national conditional grant for ECD from the National Department of Social Development, and part of that grant there will also be funds made available to help the ECDs bring their facilities up to the standard so that it enables registration to move more quickly. Madam Chair, the funding transfer budgets for the programs, also there's been what one could consider minimal increases across the two financial years. So as I said also, it's a pre-audit expenditure, and probably by the end of July when we get our management report we will have the finding as per the AGs. Madam Chair, the reasons why we do not include all the national indicators, again, the issue of psychosocial support services. As we said earlier, all our beneficiaries do receive these support services, whether they are adults or children. With respect to the indicator of the number of children awaiting foster care placement, when we actually interrogate our children's court inquiries, we find that most of the issues before the court is around foster care. It's around placement or reconfirmation of the existing foster care placement. So that's why we have that as actually a proxy indicator for children awaiting foster care placement. Number of registered or fully registered ECDs, we still haven't got a list of the discrete criteria for what constitutes full registration. This, I think, will also come more and more to light now that we've got the national grant, because they are working on various levels also of registration. I think it's a bronze, silver, and gold, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm sure that over time we'll actually get a lot closer to what is going to be considered to be a fully registered ECD. With respect to the child and youth care centres, this is also contained in our annual report, where we have a list of all the child and youth care centres that we fund in the province. With respect to the issue of children accessing services through the ECPD model, what the department has been doing has been actually training child and youth care workers to deliver prevention and early intervention services through the ECPD model. We again looking at issues around ECDs, conditional registration of programs, and yet again, we don't have good operational definitions for what exactly is a conditional registration. But I'm confident that now that we are actually looking at those various kinds of levels, and there has been funding provided by the National Conditional Grant, that we will, I think, get closer to being able to then indicate what's registered, fully registered, and conditionally registered, and should be able to report on that within, I think, well, hopefully by the next strategic planning period. Also, the notion of subsidized children accessing fully registered ECD programs, I mean, that's all part of the whole definition and explanation around what is actually registration. Okay, number of ECD practitioners in funded ECD centres meeting minimum qualifications requirements. Madam Chair, a lot of the times the ECD practitioners have completed their training. The problem is that they don't receive their certificates timeously from the National Accreditation Body. So, and besides the fact also that the National Department did discontinue this indicator, the issue here is that even if we use it as an indicator, we don't have the proof that the people have actually completed. And that means, again, the administrative part cannot be followed through and could also lead us into problems with actually being able to prove that these are registered ECD that these ECD practitioners in fact meet the minimum qualification requirements. With respect to family preservation and parenting, number of families participating in preservation services, this we reported under the indicator in of number of families participating in preservation and support services. So we are reporting on it. We can't call it an a customized indicator because it doesn't read exactly like a customized indicator. But in actual fact, we are reporting on the same thing. Number of families participating in parenting skills programs, it's the same reason. We do report this under the indicator number of parents and caregivers that completed parent education and training programs. And also, I mean, it might sound a bit simplistic, but We've tried, I think, over the past 5 years not to change our indicators' names because what we have found is that once we do, the NGOs also then have a lot of time, again, having to understand what it is that they must report on, these reporting templates that they also have to change, and it has to be changed. So there's a lot of reasons why we are reporting on issues, but it's just to ensure that our NGOs are also stabilized in terms of what they report here in and over also over a strategic planning period. Okay, our program 4 are restorative services, and here we're looking at, there's a mistake there, it's not supposed to be crime prevention, please forgive me, it's supposed to be crime prevention and support. Victim empowerment, we've put another sub-program, and as well as substance abuse prevention and rehabilitation. We are finding that the reason why we never met our achievement for the target dealing with children in conflict with the law assessed is because we only assess who SAPS actually refers. So one could say it's actually better that we don't reach that target because there could be there's less arrests and therefore less referrals. I mean, that would sort of be an optimistic, I think, way of looking at that indicator. The number of children referred to diversion programs, here again, also the courts will decide which child is referred to a diversion program, and it also depends on the nature of the offence of the child. Those who complete diversion programs, although the court orders children to a diversion program, the courts, unlike with the adults, haven't actually asked that the child comes back after they've completed the diversion program. And that is a little bit of a loophole, because what we found with the adults, the social worker has to come back to court and the adult has to come back to court, and they have to indicate, yes, the diversion program was completed. Otherwise, the adult, for example, would be sent to jail to serve the sentence. The courts haven't yet looked at children not completing diversion. But besides that, there's also problems with children getting to diversion programs. So besides the fact that if they do get there and they decide to drop out, there's no consequences per se. But also a lot of the time the programs are held in areas that a lot of children who are in conflict with the law can't cross. It's gang territory. So we're looking at how do we have these programs on sites that are relatively neutral. And that's one of the issues that the program is looking at currently. We also, in terms of our number of children in conflict with the law awaiting trial in our own and outsourced child and youth care centres, in terms of the Child Justice Act, we are also dependent here upon the court referrals and court requests, and then of course available bed space. Coming to the sector is experiencing some challenges. A lot of our, as you can see, we haven't been able to reach targets because of vacancies in the social worker posts in the sector. The department does have a program where it actually funds tertiary level specialization, but it looks like social workers are not specializing also quickly and sufficiently to be able to take up posts in the sector. Thank you. The issue with the outpatient-based services. We also find that it's also whether people are able to access the services depends on what's happening in the area, as well as, of course, the vacancies. Okay, with respect to the aftercare and reintegration services for substance abuse clients, this is also dependent on whether people finish their treatment and that they are then referred to these generally community-based programs. But here again, there's also the issue of vacancies within the NGOs that run these programs in the sector. Madam Chair, again, the budgets, as you can see, minimal increases, unfortunately, because of austerity and other issues. But the department is trying to use its resources to the best of its ability with respect to these also very important services. The reasons why we have not set targets for certain national indicators. For example, with the children in conflict with the law awaiting trial, we've got a provincial indicator that speaks to this. We've mentioned it earlier in terms of awaiting trial in own and outsourced child and youth care centres. The same with sentenced children. We do have a provincial indicator that provides information on this issue. With respect again to funded victim empowerment program service centres, a list of the service centres are available in all our annual reports every year, where we actually, as I indicated before, we list everybody we fund and also how much money we actually funding them. The number of victims of human trafficking identified, we report this as part of the indicator that counts the number of victims of crime and violence that access services. I think sort of a delicate issue here is those who run the organizations that traffic women and children are very astute at actually identifying and finding out where people are being held. So we don't want to also have too much information in the public domain about specifically victims of human trafficking. But as I said, it's also the issue of where places of safety are well known. I always say to people, if I have to tell you where our places of safety for women, abused women are, I'm going to have to kill you afterwards, because it's supposed to be a secret. It's supposed to be known by a few people so that women can feel safe when they are, the women and children are safe when they are actually put into those places. So it's a very delicate balance also that I think all departments and organizations actually have to sort of act, a balancing act that they have to follow here. Also, as was indicated before, with respect to children below the, ages of 18, we work in close cooperation with the department, our Western Cape Education Department, and for children under the age of 18, the substance abuse awareness and prevention programs are part of the life orientation classes. With respect to number of people 19 years and above, we've got a provincial indicator that actually provides information. We measure it through the inpatient and outpatient numbers, because that's all to people above the age of 18. The final program, Madam Chair, our program 5, our development and research program, where there are a number of sub-programs that we fund and implement, being institutional capacity building and support for NPOs, poverty alleviation and sustainable livelihoods, youth development and population policy promotion. Program 5 has also done extremely well. There is just one indicator where we haven't reached our objective, and that is with respect to operational youth cafes. We only, I think, because there were construction challenges with our Philippsdorp youth center, we weren't able to actually count them as operational per se. But despite that, there were programs that were being run from the Philippsdorp municipal municipality. They offered premises where youth cafe kind of programs could be operated, could be implemented while they were finalizing the construction of the youth cafe. With respect to budgets, Madam Chair, our community mobilization, we will see when we look at the indicators, is actually a transversal issue that all programs actually deal with. I'll come to that when we have a look at those reasons why. Our institutional capacity building program, we're using staff to actually run that sessions, and as I think I must have mentioned also last year, we've actually got a very able deputy director who actually does excellent work in terms of training NGOs. Our poverty alleviation budget, as you can see, is also not increased by much, as with our youth development. And Madam Chair, with respect to population policy promotion, there is no transfer funding there. That's goods and services money. And there also all the research projects and profiles are done by us, by staff. While we're not using indicators dealing with community mobilization, it's because that all our programs, they on a regular basis engage with NGOs and community members within the province. With respect to, again, the number of funded NPOs, that information is available in all our annual reports. Number of poverty reduction initiatives supported. We assess these poverty alleviation using our provincial indicators dealing with feeding at departmentally funded feeding sites and EPWP opportunities. Similarly, the number of people benefiting from poverty reduction initiatives, that is also, it is assessed through our provincial indicators, and we actually have this as a strategic objective indicator. Households accessing food through DSD food security programs. We have the indicator that looks at the number of qualifying beneficiaries who receive department feeding, funded, who access department funded feeding sites. So we've got a proxy indicator for that. Similarly, the departmental, while we're not saying accessing DSD feeding programs at the center base, our feeding sites are center-based and is then covered by our provincial indicator. The issue of household profiling, this is managed transversely as well, as is the number of communities profiled. Each of our, besides sort of the administrative nightmare of actually trying to sort out what awards, how many awards are we are expected to complete. The regional offices do community profiles on a regular basis. We have information officers who are based in regional offices, and they have been trained by our population program, and they actually are able then to do and update the community profiles for the regions as and when the region of the requiring. With respect to communities profiled and community-based plans, I mean, the same reasons that we are also applied to this indicator. Number of population capacity development sessions conducted. We have a proxy indicator in our operational plan, which actually measures people who attend as opposed to number of sessions conducted. Likewise, number of individuals who participated in population capacity development sessions. We have got a provincial measure in our operational plans that actually count the number of persons attending, number of people trained, etc. The advocacy and advocacy information, education and communication activities. This is also a proxy indicator in the operational plan, where we're looking at people as opposed to the number of activities, because also we don't see the benefit of counting activities. Number of population policy monitoring and evaluation reports produced. This is covered by our provincial indicators in which we deal with the number of population research reports completed and demographic profiles completed. They are considered to be the proxy indicators for that customized indicator. Youth development structures supported. The department has not received funds for the implementation of the National Youth Service Program and also which deals with the development of youth structures. So, but we do that via our work with the youth is around skills development and EPWP opportunities. The same with the whole issue of youth mobilization programs. We haven't received funds for the implementation of that particular element of the program. With respect to number of women participating in empowerment programs, all our interventions are with respect to women and women empowerment are managed transversely within the sub-program. The majority of clients that the department deals with is women. Okay, I think I have, I've duplicated a slide here, Madam Chair. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. For the record, I did not introduce Lamonde Chamsa and Mary Ann Burgess for this meeting, so my apologies to you, and thank you for the translators at the back who is also availing themselves for this facility. Members, I'm now going to take your questions. Member Lecker, Member Wenger. You can just ask all of your questions. Ms. Johnson will jot down and then answer. So Member Lecker, I'm noting you first.
My apologies for arriving late. First, I did not capture well the part of the learnership. That's page 4, I think, and I want to understand whether the department does not have learnership at all, or what exactly did the statement meant. Two, under the independent and assisted living facilities, I want to check. What is the normal process undertaken by the department in terms of identifying those facilities? By when will the department start doing that? And two, that question is covered. I want to check the next one. What exactly does the department mean by NPO specialized services? can I get an understanding what it entails in its totality? What exactly are those specialties? Then on the next one, I think that must have been page 8, I'm not sure, but the issue of birth certificates. If the department has so far established that there are children who has no birth certificate, clearly it means that those children are not accessing the child care grant. And to what extent is the department assisting those families to obtain child care grant? And is the department talking to the Department of Home Affairs to address the issue of children who do not have the birth certificate, instead of assuming that the courts are actually supposed to direct those families to Home Affairs and not to the department itself? Because at the end of the day, those children rely solely, they are living on the funds that the department is supposed to be issuing to those families. And also, Chair, I want to check whether there are records on the total number of those children who do not have the birth certificate thus far. With regards to the registration also of the ECDs, Chair, I'm more concerned as to what exactly is the department funding the ECDs for. Can we get an outline to say the department is funding the ECDs on 1, 2, 3? And also, if the department can be able to explain to me, in terms of the curriculum that the ECDs are following, who monitors that curriculum for those children? Then there was a mention made that there's a loophole with regards to children who are referred to a program that the court does not expect those children to come back. If there's a loophole, what has the department done thus far? Has there been any engagement or talking to the courts on how to remedy this kind of situation? Because clearly the department has found that there's a problem. So if there's a problem, what has the department done about that specific problem? Because it's something that needs to be attended to. Then my last set of questions, Chair, is under poverty alleviation. One, I want to check, why has the budget not increased much? What tools of analysis were made to come to a decision that the budget will increase by a certain percentage? Does that mean poverty is not a crisis in this province, or what exactly is the problem? Two, the department-funded sites, I want to check also as to where are the sites? What sorts of assistance are given to whoever is mending those specific sites? How much are we paying per site? What exactly are we funding those sites in terms of the most that they provide to those people? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Lekker, and I also omitted to acknowledge Members Lekker and Makaleni, who joined us after we have started. Member Wenger.
Thank you, Chair. My questions on Program 2 have already been covered, so I move on to Program 3. The number of children in funded ECD services, there was some insight into the sort of national norms for what a fully compliant or full registration requires. So is the department working on its own requirements currently? And have there been some kind of benchmarking with other provinces to see if the Western Cape is in line, or has many more criteria for full registration compared to other provinces that might be hindering that. And then I wanted to know, because the target's not met for the number of children, and that's actually what worries me, is the number of children accessing ECD. So what happens to those children if there's problems with re-registration? Does that centre then close down? Is that why we see less children than the target? Or, you know, I just want to understand, what is the implication? Because that's the reason given, but there's also an implication in that. And then my next question is just generally on Program 4, because I can understand the difficulty with trying to get a target that would talk to the numbers, because it's very unpredictable. One doesn't know how many children will be in contact with the law in a particular quarter. So I'm just trying to understand why the target isn't then set as a percentage. So 90% of children in conflict with the law are then assessed or referred to diversion programs, because then, you know that you're assisting all those children and people that are in need of assistance, but without having a target that, you know, is a bit unreliable, as it were. Thanks.
Member Gopi.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Can I go then to Member Gopi? Member Gopi.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on. I think it's. Let me see which program is this. Program. But it's page 5. Page 5, where Ms. Johnson was speaking about the workshop. Quarter 3 and quarter 4, where you were speaking about the workshop, and then you mentioned about people getting jobs outside the workshop. I want to know what do you mean that people getting employment outside the workshop. I just need more clarity on that. And then on program, where is the numbering of the program? But it's child and youth. Is that program 3? And then on page 11, where Ms. Johnson is speaking about the national indicator which target were not set, and that is program 3, children and families. I just want to know, what is the holdup of not receiving certificates? Because you are saying that it's because they don't receive the certificate from national. What is the holdup for not receiving certificates? And then on program or page 13, where you say that it depends on availability of space for those referred by court. And my question there is, what happens if there is no space? What happens to those youth? Where are they sent to? And my last one is on the funding. National indicator for which target was set. The funding, that has not received funding for youth program. And my question there is why? What is the reason for not receiving funding for the youth program? That is program 5. Thank you.
Member Makalani.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apologies once again for arriving late. Kailisha. Roads were closed. Chair, let me start with the first question. I see there's only one person from the department and the head of the department is not here. I just need to understand if there was an apology submitted.
There wasn't an apology. You were not here then.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And moving forward, Chair, I need to first make this comment to the department. When we speak about issues that we want to see the department processing, it's because you are threat and you are representing the interests of the constituencies. And the least the department can do is to acknowledge and further tell us what would be their plans. For example, in your last presentation, you spoke about the youth development and the women's program being transversal, of which we have made our intention very, very clear that we want to see a deliberate effort by the department in ensuring that we are being more concerned and more serious about youth development and women's issues. We are not saying that because we want to please the department, but it's because we want to see the implementation plan. So it can't be at this stage in our reporting programs. We still don't get those programs. I think we are not wasting our time by continuing raising, because consistently so, these two questions have always been part of our question. So I think it's really, really uncalled for the departments to keep on giving that kind of response when it comes to these two programs. Moving further, Chairperson, on page 5, there's number of older person assisting residential. The point there is the department has not achieved its target. I'm failing to understand why would the department not achieve its targets when we have long queues. A person can die today, there's already a long waiting list of people who want to access the department's residential facilities. So for me to say that people died and all the explanation that is given for me, it does not hold water. When on a daily basis, when you do oversight, you are told that there's a long list of people waiting. So I need to understand why it has to be shown in this indicator that the department is not doing that. Again, on the bottom slide, the number of that 35, I need to check if there's a plan to increase these facilities from that 35. And if this 35 is fairly scattered around the province. Again, on the protective workshops. Here it just states that there's a problem with accessibility. And one of the problem that in my understanding, and I'm sure the committee members will agree with me, and I continuously raise this, again, of the protective workshop, where we find that there is no sufficient material. What is the point of sending your child to a protective workshop where there will be no material? And the excuse keep on being the transport. But for me, besides the transport, I feel that what the protective workshop is intended for is not achieving its intended goals. And by not having sufficient material, there's not a single one ever since we embarked on our oversight, there's not a single one where we could see things that are running properly. And our children, we want when they get there to get the necessary skills with the material that is made available for them. But what's the point of sending your children there just to be called with no proper material? So I also need to understand what is the current status of this. And as we are going to embark again on oversight, are we going to find any of these problems again? In fact, I need you to assure me that going forward, this is sorted. Even in the childhood care centers, it is the same problem. And when we interrogate the department, it's telling us a different story. When we go ourselves there, we find the same problems. I try, Chair, not to ask lots of questions, because when it gets to DSD, I get very emotional. I will tell you what. On the news the other day, I was listening to Mr. Abrams' case, who killed his son. And there were people that were talking from the Western Cape, which has been to be precise, talking about the fact that our children are embarking on this drug abuse is because government programs are not coming to where it's intended for, especially TSD was blamed a lot. And I didn't want to take it as they say. I sat down and tried to go through the programs of the TSD, and I realized that most of the time that in what we are doing, it is just ticking the box. We are not necessarily, the drug problem might not be on its own tackled by TSD, but TSD can do a lot in assisting. And this is why I'm being hard with TSD, because I feel that if TSD can assist us, a lot can be done in reducing the challenges that we have. The number of children in conflict with the law, the diversion program, you said that it's the issues of gangsterism and all, but you are not telling us what is the plan in ensuring that these children, they actually get to complete this program, unless this program has been rendered useless. Because if you're saying that there is no enforcing measures by the court and the department is implementing a program that is not enforceable, then could it be now this program is being rendered useless? And in order to ensure that TSD is not wasting its money on implementing this program that these young people are not adhering to, what are the plans in place to ensure that we again this program achieve its intended goals? When these children are taken to this program, you want to see them becoming better people. And if these are not doing what they are intended for, again. Almost finished there. On page 17, I see there's a development and research program. But there it speaks about the number of beneficiaries receiving meals from the department. Now, for me, this is to understand if this is the SASA program, and if not the SASA program, aren't we using the SD resources to do a program that SASA could have covered, and therefore it's going to speak about our relationships with SASA and the national department, because I don't think it is proper for us to learn that there is an indicator from national and there is no funding allocated, but we are not given a response from national why they're not taking up what they are supposed to do with the provinces. You know? So maybe if you can tell me here also if how is the relationship between SASA and the national. Then again, the next slide, it speaks about number of young people that are linked to job and other skills development opportunities, and it is 4,000, which is a good total. In fact, it's not good. I take my word. 4,400 for the entire province for the year. For me, it's a concern. If that's all we could manage, and of this, how many were linked to jobs, the actual jobs, and how many are linked to skills? And when we're talking with jobs, are we talking permanent jobs, or it is just this EPWP program for a year? Just to give an idea there, so that before I get excited. Then again, the number of youth participating in skills development projects. If you can also give me an idea of what kind of skills are this, so that I don't just know that there are skills programs, but I need to understand what kind of skill programs, and are these just one of those programs where children are sent to a 3-month course that come back and they cannot even use those certificates afterwards. And hopefully that's not what the department is doing. If you can also give me an idea, and how long are these trainings? Then on the last one, on page 20, on the number of men participating in the empowerment program, I've indicated in my starting that I'm always very upset when I see this in the report. But maybe today can you give us the details of what are these transversal programs and how many women versus men in this program? Because I know you are going to tell me we are doing giving people food, and then if it's 100, you're giving 62 women. Hopefully that's the case. At least that shows, that will indicate to me that majority of the beneficiaries are women. But it should not be by chance because there are more women than men. in the Western Cape, but it must be because the department is making an effort to do that. So I need to sort of gauge and see if we are going towards that. Honestly speaking, we adopted, as most of the women here that attended the Women's Parliament, a call that our budget must be pro-women. And we've reported that in the Western Cape. And as such, we want to see that in the department's work. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm
happy to see some questions for you.
I won't be able to answer directly and would have to request the members and that we could provide additional information that's required. I'm starting, I think the first question, learnerships, do we have them? What does it mean? Within the department currently we don't have learnerships per se. And the learnerships, as we indicated in the reasons for not using the indicator, is that we don't want to, there's a specific way that learnerships are defined. The programs that our EPWP people are in are not classified as learnerships, and hence we can't sort of conflate the two. Currently also that the indicator would require us to actually add learnerships if they were together with EPWP opportunities. But all we are focusing on, or rather counting, let me put it that way, are the EPWP opportunities. The process for identifying facilities for independent and assisted living, I admit to the committee, I don't know the exact process, but that one can, we can provide the information to the committee. And also by when we'll be able to have all these, the amount of facilities available to reach our targets would also be something that I cannot answer, answer the committee on. Specialized NPO services for, I think we're talking here about persons with disabilities. A lot of that is also around the kinds of support that families and disabled carers of disabled need, the training that they also have to go to, the spaces that they come to, where they get the support to be able to actually care for the disabled person. So we can send you a list of the services, but it would have to do with counseling services, with family support interventions, with providing relief for carers, that sort of, that would be what we would consider to be not part of the specialized support services. With respect to the birth certificate issue, yes, I did indicate that the department is in the process of discussing this with Home Affairs, with SAPS, and with the courts. And yes, we are assisting where we can in ensuring that those children who cannot access their birth certificates immediately, actually be assisting them in getting access. But this also requires that all of the departments, the major departments involved here, work together. And as I said, my understanding was that there was a meeting with the major role players, including Justice, including Home Affairs, yesterday to look at what is going to be the best kind of referral pathway to ensure that children and their families are able to access what they need so that they can also take advantage of the services that are available to them. But there again, we can actually give you more definitive feedback if required on that, what, how far the department has actually come with that, with respect to that process. ECD registration, the breakdown, it doesn't seem that consequential when you talk about it, but currently we're allocating, I think, 15 rand per child per day, and that R15 per child per day must cover the meals that the children have, the payment of, and payment of the teachers. So if we know it's a minimal amount, and this is also where we're working with our national department and also through the conditional grant to be able to actually expand the services and bring more children on board. But the conditional grant has allowed us to increase the number of children that we actually are subsidizing with within ECD. So fundamentally what that also means is that where the means testing, we can actually drop it. We don't have to push it higher, we can drop it, and that means more people and more kids can then be funded by us in an ECD. But also the exact breakdown of the funds for an ECD, that we can also, I'll have to provide in writing to the committee.
Ms. Johnson, can I just follow up on that? I just want to know that 15 grand allocated now per child head, is it specified what that 15 grand should be used for?
Yes.
And so it means then at the end of the day, if a ECD charges that family for that family is then responsible for whatever is on top of that 15 grand. If the per day caring for that child is 35 rand, then that family needs to pay the 20 rand.
Well, we actually hope that this is, we fund very, very poor ECDs. So the chances of there being any ability to actually make up a difference is really very, very low. So, and also because there is a, as I said, there's a means test that is provided for our funding, yes. So you might have an ECD which is considered to be funded, but it's not every child in that ECD that is funded. Yeah. That will depend on the means test. But the exact breakdown of the allocation that we can definitely provide. Also the issue of the curricula. Yes, we do have M&E people who actually go out, and if there's a set curriculum to see that the ECD, the teachers are following it, that they do as part of their M&E visits. So yes, Madam Chair, we can say that we monitor what the food, we monitor the curriculum. We also monitor where the children are. Are they in the ECD? If they're not, then the ECD would be able to tell us whether that child is still a member or whether that child has actually moved on to another facility. The issue of completion of the diversion programs by children, I won't be able to tell you exactly what it is that we are doing about that, but there is a lot of work in terms of the social workers in trying to get the children to complete it. But if the children do not want to complete it at this particular point in time, there is very little that the social workers can do about it. But that's also why there is the discussion with the other, with SEPs, with Justice, with Home Affairs, in terms of how can we then actually look to strengthen and rectify that kind of situation. Why is the budget not increased with respect to the poverty alleviation? I think that the budgets haven't increased on most of our programs, and it is not because we don't consider it to be important. The austerity measures that have been put in place means that there are also times when we can't fill our posts because we've got a ceiling, and the department is trying to work around that issue. The funded feeding sites, we can provide you with a list of the funded of the sites where we are feeding, and also what we are funding there, but it would be a meal for the participants, and we're also trying to encourage if it's a family and there are children, even they, for them to actually also access. There's two schools of thought here around this issue, but that's what we're trying to actually encourage at these sites, because the issue here is a lot of the people who come to these sites have been referred by clinics, because there could be a possibility of malnutrition. You see, when the child becomes malnourished, it becomes a health issue. We're trying to look at before that situation arises. So there is work here. There's relatively close cooperation here with the health department. The benchmarking with other provinces, I think that's actually quite an interesting question. I really must admit I'm not aware whether our criteria for actually registering ECDs, well, our criteria as a Department of Social Development won't differ from our sister departments in the rest of the country. Maybe at a municipal level there could be differences in terms of registration, health and safety and that sort of thing. But I think that would actually be an interesting thing that I think we should actually have a look at with respect to the more health and safety elements of ECD registration. I must admit, I'm sorry, member, I actually missed the second part of that question around... I probably at a later date, if you could send the second part of that question, because I missed it completely in terms of what it was that you asked.
Yeah, you can do it now.
It was the benchmarking, and then it was when ECD is not doesn't be registered, does that mean it's closed down? So what is
okay.
Does it mean that the actual number of children then, is that why the number of children is less than the target, because children were in the system and then are no longer, or, you know, what is the implication of that?
Not
or does it mean that you had planned for an expansion, but it's just that expansion didn't happen because of registration? Just to understand what those numbers mean.
Fundamentally, we try as far as possible not to stop funding to ECDs. So what the department also do is they alert the ECD about the registration, I think sometimes up to 3 months in advance. Then also they would give the ECD the support and the time to try and stay registered or re-register within that time period. And it's fundamentally at the almost last push where we can't fund, because that would also be in a contravention of the transfer payment agreements that we have. However, as soon as that ECD is re-registered, then the funds are made available to the ECD to continue. We have for a long time, a lot of the times where we also can't hit the targets with the ECDs, number of children in funded ECDs, is because of evidence. Because we can't find the register, or we can't find the birth certificate, or we can't find... It's an administrative thing. Because we can only count what we can verify. And I think you can also appreciate the fact that there are about 1,000... More than half of the NGOs we fund are early childhood development centres. And we're looking at our numbers of around 76,000 children that we can actually verify and say these children are in ECDs. So a lot of the time around the targets, it's got to do with when the registers come in, we can't actually verify. And they come in quarterly. And it's a quarterly verification of 70-odd thousand children that is done on a manual basis. So what we can't verify, What we don't have proof for, we don't count. We definitely need to find another less labor-intensive way of actually verifying the children who actually access our services, Mr. Chair. That's something I think that we're all grappling with. Why don't we set targets as a percentage for the children in conflict with the law, for example, because we're not allowed to. We previously did set percentage targets and were told by the National and Provincial Treasury that we cannot have percentages as targets. And I think that's just been carried through. Because look, whether you set it as a percentage or an absolute number, you're also going to have to have your baseline data, and the checking and the testing of the absolute numbers is actually a big problem for, and I'm sure for most of the social development departments. So yeah, it was fundamentally that we couldn't. They didn't want us to use percentages, and DVME, I think, has carried that practice through. Protective workshops. Fundamentally, what we say when we talk about people getting employment outside, they actually get a job in the mainstream economy. So they don't actually have to work at the protective workshop anymore. They're working in some kind of what is considered, it could either be in the formal or in the informal sector, but they're not having to come back and work at the protective workshop as a way of also getting an income. So I don't have any information with me on exactly where people have been employed outside of the protective workshop. I'm not sure. I'd have to speak to the disability program to find out if we could actually get that kind of information. The next one dealt with the issue of, I think it was our ECD people who were trained, and the problem with not accessing certificates. I think this is a national problem. It's not only the Western Cape, and it's not an issue for the National Department of Social Development either. I think we're all grappling with the same things. Where organizations, I think, are not actually providing the certificates to people fast enough so that they can use that certificate and then go and get a job, for example. It's got to do with backlogs, yes. I think we find it in a number of professions where you've done the course, you've finished the course, but that piece of paper takes so long to get to you. And that's also why the whole issue of whether you certificated or not, because in order for us also to be able to count you as being certificated, we need to have the proof, unfortunately, of that actual certificate. The evidence that we actually require, Madam Chair, for the verification of our information is really a problem, and it's got to do with the indicators that we've got. So it's a problem, I think, that the whole country is trying to work on. We need to have indicators that are not so labor-intensive in terms of accessing, because the AG will come and have a look and say, that's not there, that's not there, that's not there. And we say, but we know the services have been delivered. But, I mean, that's the whole issue around being careful about what indicators one actually uses.
Just to follow up on that question, in terms of timeline, how long does it take for an actual, person who has gone through the training and after completion to actually get that important piece of paper in his hand.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I really don't know the answer to that, but I'm sure we can find out.
Okay.
because it wouldn't be put in as also a reason of why we're not doing things if we didn't have a sort of baseline in terms of how long we actually wait for these things.
And don't they issue a letter to say that Lorraine Water has completed the course, but the certificate will follow, or it will take 3 months for the certificate to be issued, don't they?
I'm not sure, Madam Chair, but a lot of the times the body who trains isn't the body who issues. So the accreditation authority would be the one who would issue a certificate, and I'm not quite sure whether it would be accepted that the training organization, for want of a better word, would be able to issue that kind of letter, because it's got to do with accrediting the person and ensuring that they've actually completed everything that they were supposed to complete. But as I said, I can talk to my colleagues about whether we can find out a little bit more about that.
And in the field, are you able to furnish us with the number of practitioners who have completed
but haven't been certificated? I'm sure we could do that, yeah. Okay. Should have brought a scribe with me as well. the issue, Madam Chair, bed spaces have been referred by the court. When the court refers a child to us, we have to find a space. And we do find spaces, and our director that deals with the Child and Youth Care Centre has actually set up a centralised, what does she call it, centralised, booking, I don't say booking sales service, I'm sorry the name escapes me, but we all requests or court orders around bed spaces are sent to a centralised point, and from there they actually look at where we place the children. We can't tell the court, no, we can't find a bed space. So the department has actually, I think, been quite competent at actually looking at its facilities, looking at what levels of care are required, and then actually assigning a child to a bed in one of our facilities. We would actually rather prefer that the court send the child back to their family, because that's the best place for a child to be, but unfortunately, yeah. What is the reason? The issue of the National Youth Services funding, Madam Chair, I cannot answer that question. I'm not sure why we did not receive funding for that program. But I'm sure if I have a talk to my colleague, maybe we could find out about that. I think that's all I can actually say at this particular point in time.
And this, in terms of the question posed,
just
all your questions
answers that
you
have told. Which one,
Mingo? Thank you, Chair.
We've got another
one. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were done. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you want to follow up on your the answers that you got from your question? Okay. Will you wait? Okay. All right, Ms. Johnson.
It's around the targets for older persons in residential care and why we're not able to reach it. The issue here is, besides the fact that there's mortality, I mean that people pass on, we also have a number of people who are under the age of 60 and which we are funding. And these are people who are really in almost frail care kinds of situations, and we cannot count them, but yet we pay for the bed spaces. We can't put them out, because where would they go? They don't have any place to go, but they're not 60 years and older yet, and that's why we'll always look, I think, if we look at what we fund and when we reach a target, because we're funding 9,000 beds. So that is also part of the reason why we're not reaching the targets with the older with older persons in the residential facilities. The issue the facilities increasing to from 35 that those of the disabled the residential centres for disabled persons, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, it's also a budgetary issue. The disability program is also working to expand places in the centres. I think we did receive some funding in the last financial year that we are working on creating additional bed spaces in facilities. There is a maintenance and renovation program that is going on at Sibuyili, one of our centres, so that we can actually increase bed space and bring more disabled people into the program. Madam Chair, we can provide the committee with a list of where the residential facilities were located, because I think the member wanted to know the location of across the province. The protective workshops, Madam Chair, I will certainly take this back to the department again and indicate to them that the committee was not happy with sort of our explanations around whether there's material available at the workshops that we fund. And also the case of the need for a plan regarding the fact that we are indicating that there are programs that are transversal across our, that there are target groups who we deal with transversally, to also find out from them and actually put together or show the committee the implementation plan that it has been asking for. I mean, that I will have to take back to the department. I unfortunately can't answer that myself, Madam Chair. The feeding program, the funding that we're giving for feeding is separate from the SASA program. And we do have a relationship with SASA, and we actually have an MOU with SASA where we work together on certain projects. So the relationship, I personally don't sit in those meetings, but I haven't heard that the relationship is one that is not working. But we're not duplicating what SASA does, because a lot of our, as I said, our feeding sites and our beneficiaries are referrals from our clinics and from the health department and other government organizations, where we actually try to feed the beneficiaries for a period of time so that enable them to actually get on their feet and then be able to, I like to talk about the opportunity costs of them not having to actually buy food, because they can use that money to actually access other services that they need. There's a number of plans that the committee would like the department to discuss with them, and I will definitely, my apologies if you never received what it is that we promised you to you'd receive, but we'll get you what you wanted. Okay. Not sure if I've answered everybody's questions.
There is some follow-ups, so I'm giving an opportunity to members later and later. Thank you, Chairperson. I want to go back to the ECDs. We were told that the subsidy is 15 rand per child. So if I look at the ECD and partial care budget of 297 million, and if I add the target for children in ECD as well as children in funded school care programs, their subsidy is in excess of 3,000 rand per child. So So I'd like to know, what does that budget cover in addition to the 15 rand subsidy?
Member Lekka?
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I want to check, whilst the austerity measures, which in a way affect to some extent service delivery in the department, does the austerity measures include the packages that are given to the MEC? Thank you.
Budget, we also fund ECD NGOs who also do training and capacity building and that kind of thing with the ECDs and mentoring and training in the ECD sector. But we can give you a complete breakdown of the budget as well if necessary in terms of what is being funded. But when we look at the child, the minimum that we're funding is 15 rand per child per day. A lot of the times we can't sort of take the number of children and divide it into the budget because there are also other issues that, or other organizations and within the ECD sector that we do fund to do particular things. Sorry, member, I didn't quite get the question. Does the austerity measures...
include the packages to the MEC, including traveling and others?
This is also a question that I would have to go back to the department with, but the ministry does have its own budget. And like the department would have its own budget, there would be austerity measures that would apply across the board. Yeah. So, but we can also answer that question, I think, maybe more comprehensively and with the right information, because I really don't want to give wrong information to the committee.
Members, do you want to grab a quick coffee or tea and then come back?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll give you about 10 minutes and then we come back.
Yeah.